Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Larry Rohr for Lori Walsh today. Joining us in the South Dakota Community Foundation Gallery in Rapid City are Dr. Rachel M.K. Headley and Meg Mankey. Business leaders need employees who are engaged, innovative, and love what they do for a living. Employees need leaders who understand the best way to craft a work culture that breeds that attitude. It's our Brown Bag Book Club. Both Rachel and Meg are senior partners in Rose Group International in Spearfish. Rachel and Meg, welcome to In the Moment.
Hey, Larry. It's great to be here.
Good morning.
You know, Lori was gone unexpectedly today, and I had a brief conversation with Rachel earlier today on the phone, and I think I described our conversation as this: we're going to dance, and you're going to lead.
That's the way we like it, Larry.
And
we have to say that we're sad that Lori's not here.
Yeah, as are we all. And a forewarning, I'm not a good dancer, so away we go.
Wear our steel-toed shoes.
Let's talk a little bit about you two as a pair, co-authors, as work partners. Set this up for you, the path that brings each of you with your special knowledge, and then finding each other and creating a business and writing together.
Why don't you start, Meg?
Sure. Well, I grew up through I got a finance degree and then decided if I was locked in a room by myself for the rest of my life, poring over numbers, like the last guest you just had, I might go crazy. So my career kind of led me to doing work in HR and people management in various different career roles. And Rachel and I, I've done a lot of strategic leadership work and understanding organizational psychology and how to really get people off the dime as a group while avoiding, you know, pitfalls like groupthink and reduced retention and reduced productivity. So Rachel and I have known each other for quite a while and started commiserating one day about how business doesn't necessarily serve the employees well, but then they expect some incredible service in return from their employees, and that if in fact people, you know, organizations focus more on their folks, then they would have better customer service and customer experience. And so we sat down with a bottle of wine and a really big notebook, and then that turned into a book and a business. That's the long and the short of it for me.
Okay. Well, the thing Meg didn't tell you is that she grew up on a ranch outside of Belle Fourche, and she's been working out problems since she could ride a horse, which was pretty young. So I grew up on a farm in Brookings County, and I had the great pleasure of starting my career at the Aeros Data Center north of Sioux Falls as an intern. And after I graduated from SDSU, go Jacks. And I grew up through the ranks of the science program, worked on my PhD, and I started seeing how, as a scientist in a big engineering outfit, I had to kind of figure out how to support people in a way that couldn't do their job. They were amazing, world class at what they did, and I was just there to support them, and how could I do that better? And that really got me really getting nerdy about leadership and change and how to get people through change, and decided to go out and do some consulting, but I was by myself and I didn't like that, and so I talked to Meg and she came on board and we sort of started there.
Okay. Have the two of you, in conversations and filling that notebook or emptying that bottle of wine, ever talked about if there is something in that ranch life or that farm life that has made a contribution or helped shape the direction or the philosophies that you have? As opposed to, I grew up in Sioux Falls, okay, I'm a city boy. So is there anything there that you think has had an impact on the work that you do now?
Well, our mom has warned you about the city boys.
They don't dance.
I would say, you know, for me, ranch life certainly is kind of where it all started, which in the book, you know, a lot of the stories that I've shared in the book were about lessons I learned on the ranch and working with my family, my dad, my sisters, and my mom, and that, you know, it makes you stubborn, and it instills you with good work ethic and lots of perseverance, even when you don't really want to be perseverant anymore. So I would say that's definitely the gift that ranch life has given to me, and I do think it, well, it certainly shapes my personality. And a bottle of wine in, you really find that out. But
right, it's too early in the day for the real truth.
Okay. Yeah.
But I would say too, Larry, that for the company, you know, we're South Dakota, born and bred, and what really that gives us that I think a lot of other consultancies that work on a national level don't have is our practicality. You know, we have all of our stuff is backed in theory. We're intellectuals in the worst way. We have 5 degrees between us. But we don't let that get in the way of how to actually get things done. Because at the end of the day, that's what matters. That's what we help companies do. And we hear time and again that it's the most practical approach, the way we do things, that people have heard of in decades of experience, which is, for us, the highest form of praise that we can have. Yeah.
Well, this is the Brown Bag Book Club. There is a book at stake here, and I want to mention that now. I want to make sure that everyone has a chance to kind of get a feel for who the both of you are in the background. But the book is IX Leadership, and if you put IX Leadership in, for example, your Amazon search, you'll find it. It's available in various formats. There, and it's also kind of become it's the story, and it's become the foundation for some of the consulting work you do. But let's start with the title, because Rachel, as I had asked about, and you made clear, it has nothing to do with nine or title or Title IX. It's more of a business acronym that not everyone may be familiar with.
Yeah, well, we were at a meeting down in Arizona with a big tech firm, and they were telling us about how they were so focused on customer experience. And in the tech side of the house, it's called CX, customer experience. And they were telling us about that. At the same time, they were telling us about how much turnover they had, just massive amounts of turnover, and how the turnover was resulting in the CX being poor, and they couldn't keep clients, and this is such an important thing. And, you know, it really, the light bulb went on for us, and we immediately started having the conversation about, you know, if they would turn their focus from customer experience to an internal experience of their staff, then perhaps they could decrease that turnover, increase who of course happy employees are going to take care of your customers. And so for us it became a obvious acronym, the internal experience, and how what is it about your company? Is it, do when you walk in the front door of your organization, think about soundtracks to movies is a good analogy we like to think about. Is it a John Williams score, you know, Superman, Star Wars, big orchestral excitement, or is it about, you know, a funeral dirge or a Wagner opera where you just don't even want to run right out the door? So that's kind of how we came up with the acronym.
In putting it, constructing the book in bringing those thoughts into publication, where did they come from? How did you run across the material, and you realized that you had something that was different, needed to be shared? From business experience, from just observing, where'd this come from?
Well, I would say for me it was lots of practical on-the-job experience paired with my degree in strategic leadership from Black Hills State University. Whoop, whoop, go Yellow Jackets. So, you know, I have the actual technical background in understanding the different styles of strategic leadership, and then have a lot of understanding of where they're missing the mark. And so that's when I started, that paired with my HR experience, I really started thinking about, you know, how could you make an impact in a different way as a consultant to businesses? And so working with a nerd like Rachel, who does the things that I don't necessarily do well, really kind of put the legs under it, you know, because I can talk about it until the end of the earth. And she said, okay, well, let's put it in a scatter plot. And she talks about like X and Y axis, like I know which is which. I just said, can we please say horizontal and vertical, or north and south, east and west? And so anyway, we got everything sort of crosswalked through that. and created this system, and then we wrote a book about it, I guess.
It did. And the funny thing about the book is that we have been working with the material in the book for many years, but it became obvious to us. We wanted to work at a nationwide level, and you just can't get traction without a book. And so in some ways it was a strategic decision as a business consultancy. But the flip side is that putting the book together requires you to really think through things in a way, because you're explaining it to people who you aren't there to clarify. So you have to explain it in a way that resonates and with the stories that we would normally tell people, and how do you capture that in a book form and interweave it, and which is why we have a writer, Michelle Stampy, who is outstanding and has gone on to, we were her first book, and she has gone on to done great things as an author in her own right. But that's really why we hired Michelle, is to help us package what we have to say, and the power of what we have to say in a way that resonates with people.
Okay. Well, and this comes out of, let's talk a little just briefly. We're going to take a break in a bit, and I want to really dive deep into IX leadership. But where does this fit into the organizational process of Rose Group International? Is this is a byproduct of that work? How did Rose Group? How did you get together and form the company, and with what intent?
Yeah, I would say we got together to create Rose Group International to deliver kind of this good work. So I would say, you know, if you were a paper boy, mm-hmm. or girl or whatever, and had a route, then, you know, Rose Group International is kind of the bike you're riding, and IX Leadership is the paper that you're delivering.
Okay.
So it's the deliverable for our consulting firm, which is Rose Group International.
And the real difference that we like to talk about is the book is a leadership book. It's leadership style. We have we intend to be the most popular leadership style in the world before we're done, because we feel like it's so needed right now. It's a focus on culture and transformation. But the other thing is that we find that in the leadership space, a lot of leadership doesn't actually solve any problems. Leadership can be very self-reflective, and that's very important. But what we think we see on the landscape is that we don't teach leaders how to actually work in teams and build cultures and how to help people work together and understand differences and support each other. And so we didn't really know we were doing leadership, because we were solving problems for companies for a long time, retention, transcultural integration of mergers and acquisitions, that sort of thing. And then when we put the book together, we kind of looked at each other one day and said, I think this is a new leadership style. And so the leadership part kind of surprised us, but at the end of the day, when we look back, it makes a lot of sense. And so everything sort of came together when we were writing the book.
Do you think that recognizing that there was a need for this new leadership style had revealed itself, and there was a book right there, did the need for that change kind of out from underneath business, or was it something? I mean, times had changed, and this new leadership style kind of revealed the need for it, or would have this sort of leadership and consulting worked 50 years ago?
I think that kind of our theory on that topic is that, you know, for a lot of years, last several years, we've spent a lot of time as businesses focusing on individual leadership development. And so, you know, that's the Myers-Briggs, DISC, you name them all, Predictive
yeah.
Index, Strengths Finders, and those are all incredible resources for an individual to understand who they are, and it's actually introspective, and then it gives them an opportunity to look out and say, okay, well, this is how I see the world. What we left on the table then in focusing so much on that was that we didn't teach leaders how to actually help their teams and understand the dynamics of their teams and how every one of the skill sets and work preferences and preferred environments of those people affects the productivity and efficiency of the team. And so that's really how our stuff is different and why we created it. And I don't think that, I mean, I'm sure it probably would have worked, you know, 50 mm-hmm. years ago. But I always say that our stuff is the next step. You know, I'm very cautious to say it's better than the personality type systems that are out there. I think you have to, you know, you can start with that and understand yourself, but really to understand team dynamics and move people forward as leaders and as teams, this is the next step that businesses need to be looking at.
We're going to talk a little more very specifically about the leadership aspects that Dr. Rachel M.K. Headley and Meg Mankey have captured in IX Leadership. First, we're going to take a break. This is the Brown Bag Book Club. Our guests again, Meg Mankey and Rachel Headley. You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. I'm Larry Rohr for Lori Walsh. We'll learn more about the ways that employers can create the kind of environment that keeps employees engaged, productive, and happy. Our guests, Meg Mankey and Rachel Headley, authors of IX Leadership. Our Brown Bag Book Club continues from the South Dakota Community Foundation studio in Rapid City. And it's a pleasure to have you both with us on the air today. Let's talk about IX Leadership. And somewhere in a file on my laptop in front of me is my Myers-Briggs quadrant and number. And and through my career, particularly here at Public Broadcasting, there have been different conclaves and activities with talking about what makes a good leader and styles. But the sense that I get from looking over the materials you have and the conversations we've had prior is that the focus may be on changing people, but it's more identifying people and putting them together in the right combination. Am I on track there?
Well, that's one way we can do it. Okay. What happens a lot for organizations is something's not working right, whether it's maybe retention, you're losing people you'd like to keep, or let's say you're doing a big change and it's freaking people out, and everyone that's listening I know has been at work or is going through something like that where, let's say, somebody got fired and no one knows why, they've just bought a new company and you're trying to integrate everybody. The thing that we do well and our framework really excels at is understanding who you have in your organization. We have culture types, we have a typology that we use, similar to Myers-Briggs, but we're measuring different things. And the great thing about our framework is it helps us understand how those people are gonna go through change together, how to create work environments where they can thrive. And then of course, if you're working there's a crazy statistic that if you're working in a way, an environment that allows you to thrive, you're actually like 70% more productive than if you're working in a way that stresses you out. So our goal is get people locked into who they are and how they love to work and how they can work together.
And it's something that you identify, and I believe you call culture types. And let's talk about that in a second. I have a quick reminder that I missed at our break. For everyone in the Northern Hills, that's Spearfish area, KYSD 91.9. We're going to be off the air for maintenance just a few minutes. We hope it's just a few minutes break, but be patient with us or find us online at sdpb.org and listen, and you can listen along on your mobile or your computer device. That combination, am I correct? It starts with culture types within an organization?
Yeah, we usually engage all of our clients. We start out by doing the culture type assessment on all the involved parties. And then we put it on a scatter plot with the horizontal and vertical axes.
X and Y.
So that the team can see where other people are. So each individual can see where the other people are in their team, and the team can understand a little bit more about the dynamics in the workplace. So that's really where we start. And that, when we go through and explain, you know, the differences between the four types, fixers, independents, stabilizers, and organizers, we get a lot of head nodding. And people are like, oh, that's why they do that thing, and it drives me crazy. So that's where we start, is with the culture types.
I love titles that don't need like a colon and an explanation. So when you're talking about fixers and independents, you know, you go, oh, the lights go on right away. But go a little deeper into those, how you identified people in those groups and a little more about identifying who those people are, why they're in that group.
Well, the short version or the easy version is that it's, if you think about that X and Y quadrant, we really measure people's tolerance for chaos around change. So some of us, like Larry, you and I were talking before mm-hmm. the show, that we both like change, we see opportunity in change, but there's a whole lot of people that don't. And that is a key difference that we measure. The other thing we measure is people's tolerance or need for team and team dynamic. Some people cannot work. Me, as a fixer, I am chaos, what we call chaos tolerant, love change. And I am team driven, which means I love to work in a team. And I worked on my own for a couple years as a consultant, and I just was not happy. I could do it. I was successful, but I wasn't really thriving the way I could, which is why, working with Meg and our wider team now is such a joy. And then the other side of it is self-driven people. Meg is an independent. She's chaos tolerant, and she's self-driven, which means she doesn't, she's not as tied in to that team dynamic. She can work, she loves to work at home, and she doesn't need to come into the office. I go crazy if I'm alone too long, which my team can attest to. And so the difference, and so understanding, those are the two axes that we measure on. And so independents are chaos people, and they are self-driven. We have fixers, that's me, that's chaos-driven and team. We have stabilizers who are order tolerant. That's our biggest category, about 45%. Order tolerant and socially team driven. And then we have organizers who are self-driven and order tolerant. So those are the four. I know it's hard to visualize. We have mm-hmm. graphics on our website we can send to people. IXleadership.com, we have a whole graphics page. You can check out some of the graphics.
Is it important that those four groups, do you need people from all four to have an effective team, or is it understanding, even if you just have an independent and a fixer, just to have a better understanding of each other?
Yeah, it's more about when we talk about this with our clients, they look at their scatter plot and they go, oh no, we don't have any organizers. I was with a group earlier this week. They said, oh, we don't have any organizers. And I said, well, that's okay. It's really more about understanding what is on the team, what exists, and how those dynamics work and how those people work together. Because then you have a way to decide how you're going to work the most effective as a team. So it's really more about understanding it than it is about putting together the perfect team. And I would say we've seen teams that work really well together that have types in all four quadrants. We've seen teams that work really well together and they're missing one or two. And we've seen teams that work really poorly together that have all of them or missing one or two. So we haven't found any trends that lead us to believe that there's a specific way that works the best. It's really about utilizing the information so the team works the best together.
Okay. When you are starting this process, you're working with a client, working with a staff, and is you're at some point, then you're identified as a fixer, an independent organizer. Is there any hierarchy? People think, oh gosh, I wish I was one or the other. Is there any group shame or anything if you're in one group or the other? How do you handle that?
That's such a great question, Larry, because we worked really hard to make sure that that wasn't a thing. Okay. Because the real secret is that we all need each other. So if you think about a group of all chaos tolerant people, let's say a group of all fixers, and we all try to get something done, we're all hand waving, whiteboarding, and there's not a lot of things getting done. With a lot of good ideas, but it's super chaotic. If you have everybody who is on the order side, and that could feel very bureaucratic because it's all, everyone likes stability. And so what we really do is the power of our system is to say, listen, we chaos people need order people and order people need chaos people, but that very difference in how they see the world makes it hard to work together. And so really the fun part is helping them figure out how do we harness the energies of both sides. And it's funny, specifically to your question, our stabilizer category, we first labeled connectors because they're so team oriented. But we found that a lot of people felt like that was a weak label, like that wasn't a strong enough label. So we changed early on after we did some testing, we changed the name to stabilizer. And that seemed to resonate as a stronger title. And I always laugh because I said it sounds like a car part. So
yeah,
it's very,
does.
Very yeah. masculine yeah. sounding.
It's on my trailer hitch.
Yeah. Right, that's right. But we do try very hard to not, there isn't, we have rock stars and we have weak links in every single culture type. So it's not about someone's better than another. It's about how do we leverage each other's strengths and minimize their weaknesses.
Okay, let's take that a little deeper. I mean, simply understanding that there are these types, and particularly if people go, oh yes, and the light bulb goes on right away and they recognize them. If you recognize a type, it's like if you, Rachel and Meg just met each other, but then you begin to understand that Meg is an independent and it's okay if she wants to work over here by herself and you don't need to feel bad if she doesn't want to be part of the team all the time. I mean, that in itself has to help, but then you carry that deeper. On the awareness is one thing. How to leverage that into team success is several steps beyond that.
Yeah. So the next part of the process is really what we call kind of refining. So you understand, you do some discovery. That's the first step and the first part of the book. Mm-hmm. So you do some discovery and understand the culture types and the dynamics of how they can possibly work together. What the fears and challenges and excitements are for each of the different culture types. And so once you have a pretty good foundation of how the world impacts the people around you and on your team, then we move into the Kurtz change transition model and how those four culture types process change in the refined section of the book. And so then we say, well, it's nice to know that we understand how we work together, what things that we how we kind of access the world in a different way or have a different perspective. And then we say, but that's not quite good enough. We're going to then talk about how each culture type goes through the process of change. And so whether it's a change from I'm not thirsty to I'm thirsty to, hey, we're implementing some new software that's going to impact everyone, the change itself, the process of change itself is the same, but how each person in each culture type experiences that and manages that change is different. And so that's the next step where you really start to see, where I would say people we work with really start, can envision that having happened in their world. You know, we do a lot of imagine statements. Imagine a time when, you know, you were doing a software implementation and how are the different personalities around the boardroom table. You know, somebody was standing up at the whiteboard going to solve the whole world's problems in 30 minutes, and then somebody never even showed up for the meeting. Another person is taking copious notes and seems very stressed out, and another person is walking around in the boardroom distracting everyone and trying to find out what everybody thinks about it. So that's kind of the four different culture types, and then we talk through how to understand those culture types and why they're doing what they're doing during a point of change instead of just judging them and saying, oh, you're in the way. Like, you sit down, you stay at lunch, we don't want you in here anyways, you're annoying. Fixer, you know, come away from the whiteboard, sit on your hands, and, you know, the organizer, everybody's like, you keep writing notes, that's good. You should keep doing that no matter what. You're not bothering anyone.
Okay. Well, you know, and I think maybe we can step back and get a little broader picture of this process. It just, the full title of the book is IX Leadership, Create High Five Cultures and a Guide to Transformation. So can you kind of demonstrate this process, maybe kind of generically, in a business setting? Apparently someone has recognized we need help from Meg and Rachel.
Yep.
Is there a typical point where they say, I want to get to from A to B? How does this process work, and what is the value of B when you're done?
Right, well, that's the most important thing, is understanding what does success look like. So one example is we worked with a client down in Atlanta, and they were trying to kick off a new program that they felt would save their company. They're in recycling, so some policy changes meant that they had to change how they did things. And they just couldn't sort it out. They had a chaos tolerant, vice president of ops, and he was going like gangbusters to make this happen. And he was working with the chief marketing officer, who is a stabilizer, and she's very order tolerant. And when they kicked off this whole program, they had a schedule. And starting in January, the marketing officer was going to kick in, and she was going to do this whole big campaign. Well, between when in November and January, the ops officer decided he was going to change up some things, but didn't tell the CMO, because he's chaos guy. He's waving around and he's running down things. He assumed that she would check in with him before she went embarked on this big campaign, and she assumed that he would let her know if anything changed, because they had a plan and she works the plan. And so it's just a simple, and so what we did with that organization is we went in and we just did a one-day retreat with their executive team, where, because it was clear that this dynamic of the team was what was kind of accidentally sabotaging them. Everyone's well-intentioned. Mm-hmm. It's like we accidentally get at each other. And so we worked with them for a day. We went through culture types. We worked on, okay, what do you guys actually want to achieve here? What's the goal in mind? What are you struggling to achieve? And what does that look like? And then we talked about the challenges. We're great at talking about elephants. Where that's one South Dakota thing, I think, that we're good at is we can address issues without hurting, without tiptoeing around. And then at the end of the day, we talk about values and how we're going to achieve this. We're very tactical, very implementation oriented. So, you know, if you want to be here in 2 years, what do you got to do between here and now? And how does culture types fit in? And understanding how you guys are dealing with change and someone's going to be anxious and someone's going to be excited, but you have to respect each other. And so we actually help the company create tactics that they use themselves that's special to them. So we don't come and say, here's your 3-inch binder of things you have to do and anything special you have, too bad, make it work. We actually customize everything working with the teams, and then it's real and it's personal. I mean, even when we do a keynote in front of a big group of people, we culture type everybody first. And then when we talk about leadership, we're talking about the people in the room. And so that's a really powerful way that culture types resonates with people.
We're going to talk a little bit about the impact of all of this and the result. I know there's some more great stories to tell and something to be very proud of the business culture in South Dakota, the impact that businesses like Rose Group International have far beyond our borders. That's all coming up. We're coming back for more after a short break. Our Brown Bag Book Club guests are Dr. Rachel M.K. Headley and Meg Menke. It's IX Leadership. That's our topic today in that book. More coming up on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Larry Rohr for Lori Walsh today. Great internal experiences designed by leadership. That's at the heart of the book, IX Leadership. Our guests are Dr. Rachel M.K. Headley, Meg Menke from the Rose Group International. They're joining us from our Rapid City studios as we continue with the Brown Bag Book Club. So I can imagine through the course of a day or two, what's a typical consultancy, over a week or a day or a few days?
Yeah, it kind of depends on what will work well for the organization that we're engaging with. So Rachel and I have both been in business, and that's really where we spent all of our careers, was being in business and not as consultants. So we understand the challenge of getting a bunch of people in a room together for 30 minutes, let alone a full day or longer than that. But so we're really careful to make the schedule work for our client. What we end up doing a lot is a full day, with the executive team. And then if we're doing other work with other folks in their organization, we'll do a day to 4 days with other groups in the organization. So that might be some, anywhere from frontline supervisors up to VPs or mid-level management. So it really kind of depends. And we usually stick with our clients for a minimum of 6 months, really. Okay. We like to give them follow-on support because, again, Rachel and I have both had the experience and pleasure, or lack thereof, of working with consultants where, they come in, they swoop in, they do a half day or a day or even a week, and then they're gone. And the reality is with leadership and creating culture and creating accountability, we don't know how to do that necessarily. We all specialize in the things that we specialize in, like engineering or accounting or, managing projects and big budgets. And so we like to stick with our clients for a bit so we have an opportunity to make sure that they're successful in implementing an IX culture.
Okay. Sometimes when change gets discussed organizationally, heads nod and everybody goes, great, this sounds good. Now, can I go back to doing things the way I do them? And I would assume you're looking for aha moments individually, but then a collective change or impact or aha moment. What do you see? How do you know that you are being successful in working with a client? And what do you see?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of times intellectually, no matter if we're an order tolerant or a chaos tolerant person or any of the four types, intellectually we understand that change or that initiative, but sort of deep down, we are order tolerant people and we need different things than, let's say, a chaos tolerant people need. So that's one of the powerful things is we understand how to communicate, how to get people on board. But the flip side is that you can also think about using the culture types of your organization, the people, and I wouldn't say use it against them necessarily, but use it in a way that resonates with them to the point where they feel comfortable moving. So, you know, stabilizers are most deeply entrenched, and they love stability, and they're in it, and they want everyone else to be in it. And they don't like to be isolated, so they're never going to jump ahead of the pack. But they also want to stay in that team. And so if you can get 30% of your people to move, then those stabilizers will come too, because they love that team and they want to stay with that team and they want to move together. And so that's a real secret of trying to get people to move, is that you have to understand who's on your team and then get about 30% of people moving. And then, of course, every third person you talk to is all in, and that makes all the other people want to be in too. So that team-oriented side really supports that change, but you have to understand it and you have to be able to understand who it is and how they react to change.
Yeah, and one story I would share, I was working with a group and they had a big change. They were actually acquired. And so I was working with the kind of the executive team, and so we went through their scatter plot, and they had a gal who was really a deep stabilizer on their team. And so I always know when I'm in a room with people, I always know that they're starting to get it when one of two things happen. They're either laughing, because it's uncanny how close to true the results are as I start to explain them on the possibilities that they're bringing up on their team. And two, they start talking to each other instead of listening to me, because they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that really happens to us. I think they put cameras in our boardrooms.
They've been spying on us.
But this gal was a deep stabilizer, and I went the first time and she was like, oh my gosh, this is scary, but I know everybody here loves and supports me, so we'll get through it, it'll be fine. The next time I went, I said, how are things going? And there was another woman in the group, and she said, actually, it's been going really well. And I said, well, how's it going for person X, the stabilizer? And she said, even better than it was before, because now that we know what her tendencies are, whenever she looks panicked, we just stop and say, oh, she's having a stabilizer moment, let's talk about it. And so I think that's the real result that kind of drives home the point of the system and the way it works, is that you actually stop and take time for those important conversations, because you know that if you don't, you've already come from a place where you've seen what the result is of that, and it's not good.
I'm trying to imagine your aha moment when you realize that these culture types, this experience that from your business and consulting, and you began to see this IX leadership experience come together. When did you realize and where, you know, what change occurred? Things used to be, or a typical leadership or team culture was one thing, but now you have these four categories, and you try to have people work together. Where did this process come from to where you have it now?
That's a really big question.
Yeah.
I'm going to choose to answer
okay.
it.
All right.
You know, the funny thing is, Larry, is that a lot of us go to work on eggshells every day. And I had a job where I would walk all the way around the long build, this huge building, so I wouldn't have to walk in front of somebody's desk or somebody's door.
Oh my.
And that happens a lot. I mean, I think it's like 60-some% of people say they're disengaged from work. And the trick is, though, that nobody wants to go to work that way. Everybody wants to go to work, and they don't. We don't expect people to love their job. It's a job. It's hard work. We get it. Mm-hmm. But going to work and not being miserable is really powerful. And so what we do, what our system does, is we give them a way to see each other in a new way, so through a new lens. So, you know, Meg and I, we might get at odds because she's an independent and she likes work from home and I'm a team person. That's why I want a team, and so I can work together. And so we've had to navigate that. And if we didn't know this about each other, it could be very easy to, even though we like each other, know each other, have known each other for years, good friends, our kids know each other, it's very easy to get at odds if you don't know this about each other. Even if you know about each other, nobody's perfect. And so what we do is we let people see each other in a new way. We break how they see each other intentionally. We give each other a new way to think and see each other. And that's why those moments that Meg said about, oh, she's having a stabilizer moment, that statement shows that they are understanding that person's way of working, and they honor it, and they're trying to figure out how to be effective as her, as their team member. And we also, you know, we laugh a lot. I'm a fixer, and a lot of times fixers will fix things that aren't broken because we like to fix. And so, you know, we were at another event where somebody was trying to, we had to walk from one venue to another about a half a block, and someone offered to give somebody a ride. And we're like, hey, Tricia, stop fixing and get over here. Yeah. There's not a problem for anybody. And so for us, it's really a way to not necessarily make things happy, but we recognize that we have leadership classes all over and people are still going to work miserable. So what can we put in place to decrease the misery and the high five culture? I want to go into work. Meg and I high five every day. Yeah. Because we're so excited what we're doing and the things we're accomplishing and those clients that we're helping and new clients that come to us and have a new problem that our stuff solves, and it's just thrilling. And we want to make sure we give that opportunity for everybody.
You know, in looking at these four culture types that are part of this process, I notice one is not an enabler, which seems to me would kind of be the antithesis of what you're talking about. An enabler would just say, well, I'm just going to try to make things, everybody get along so we don't have to address issues or understand each other. I mean, it seems like that's the whole point is, let's get rid of the eggshells and give us a platform where we can understand why someone thinks or does what they do. So everything else that we do, not we understand that, can be done at a higher or more efficient level.
Yeah, so good segue. It's like you've done this before for a while. So the third part of the book is Propel, and that's really all about taking all of the information with the culture types and the Kurtz change transition model and those team dynamics that you now really pretty thoroughly understand and putting a wrapper around it of core values. And so that's different than, you know, your value statement, your purpose statement as a business, your mission statement. It's why do we actually all come to work here together every day? Because every day is not easy. And especially now in this day and age, people could sell their house and their car and fly to Europe and get a job, you know, in a heartbeat, or work from home, or, you know, walk across the street and get a job. So those core values are really about what is it that no matter what, I know that these people have my back and I have their back, because we are responsible to this business being successful. And so the other thing we really talk a lot about with that is accountability. So this stuff is all, you know, it all sounds really good on paper, especially if it's in a book. But you're right, that kind of enabler attitude can happen, and eggshells can come back if you don't hold each other accountable to the agreements that you've made and the strategic value plan that you put together to say, okay, this is how we're going to choose to run this business, which means, you know, if somebody has a bad attitude one day, I'm going to give them some grace, assume that it's not about me or anybody else in the business, that it's actually, you know, they're frustrated about something that really does make sense to them for their perspective, and then I'm going to figure out how to help them fix that so we can keep going, because it's about sort of marrying that empathy. I understand where you're coming from, even if I don't, but I'll take it. I'll give you some grace. And we're running a business, and we all need to be accountable to the success of that business. So marrying empathy and accountability is kind of the bow on the gift that we give to clients.
We're coming down just the last couple of minutes. I want to talk a little bit about the Rose Group, and Rachel, you and I visited about this before the program. You work from coast to coast, from Manhattan to San Francisco and in between, and you say you often hear from businesses in South Dakota who want to get that really high-profile out-of-state consultant to come in. And then I said, well, what does it feel like when someone from San Francisco says, we got this really high-profile consultant coming in from Spearfish?
Well, you know, the awesome thing is at the end of the day, we get to work in South Dakota, which is an amazing place, very business-friendly from a business perspective, mm-hmm. as the best people, like we've all heard about, best work ethic, best, smart, well-educated, all of the good things. But the cool thing is nationwide, we get to tell people, we get to change businesses all over the US, and then we get to go home to Spearfish, which is essentially a small mountain town where our kids are going to outstanding schools. I can sit on my front porch and watch the world go by, and the neighbors will pull in and we'll sit and have a chat, and the sidewalks roll up at 5 o'clock. You can't get a hot meal in Spearfish after 9, hardly anywhere. And so it's just the pace of life is incredible. And when we talk about it that way, people get it. We were on top of the Sony building in Midtown Manhattan, and at this big event, and it was really sexy, and all you can see are the skyscrapers and the Chrysler building and the Empire State Building and the Freedom Tower and all kinds of crazy cool stuff. And we were talking to somebody, and they said, well, I live on 33rd and 8th. That's how they talk in Manhattan, what the cross streets are. And we said, well, we live in South Dakota. And they're like, where?
You're from Canada?
Yeah, what? Like, where are you? What? Like, why? I mean, it's like another planet. And then we tell them, it's like we get to live in the, we're on the border of the Wild West and the Mountain West. And it's incredible. And they really get it when we talk about the pace of life and the quality of life. And we get best of both worlds. We get Midtown Manhattan, and we get to hike Crow Peak.
It's been such a pleasure to talk with you. And if you need any reassurance, if you're listening to Meg and Rachel's voice, they practice what they preach. And if you would like to learn more, here's the book again. It's IX Leadership. It's Creating the High Five Culture and the Guide to Transition. It's the Rose Group International, and very, very great pleasure to have you of our guests today in the Brown Bag Book Club. Dr. Rachel M.K. Headley, Meg Mankey, continued success. Thank you for being here today.
Thanks, Larry. It was great.